Did you know that your medical school application GPA will likely not be the same as your transcript GPA? There are lots of reasons for that, and it can be frustrating, but there is a free, easy way to calculate your medical school application GPA at mapped.com. That's MAPPD.com. Using Mapped app, which is now free to use for a GPA calculator, this is a new change. So if you've checked out Mapped before, if it's been a while, go check it out. We've come a long way with Mapped app. And now with our free tier, after your 30-day free trial, using the referral code 30 days free, that's all one word, all capital letters, 30, the number 30 days free. After that free trial of using all of the amazing features inside of Mapped, you can now continue to use Mapped for free. Again, that's mapped.com, MAPPD.com. Specialty Story, session number 186. Whether you are a pre-med or a medical student, you've answered the calling to become a physician. Soon you'll have to start deciding what type of medicine you'll want to practice. This podcast will tell you the stories of specialists from every field to give you the information to make sure you make the most informed decision possible when it comes to choosing your specialty. Welcome to Specialty Stories. My name is Dr. Ryan Gray, your host here every week, where I get to have amazing conversations with physicians. If you haven't checked out our e-shadowing program yet, go check it out at eshadowing.com. You can earn certificates for credit hours that you can put on your application. Most medical schools have said, hey, look, we understand COVID's happening. Shadowing is hard to find. And so, yes, we will accept virtual shadowing. So put that on your application, eshadowing.com. Today, I'm talking to Dr. Lisette Iglesias, a pediatric endocrinologist who has a great story about kind of her journey and why she's in private practice and what led her to go into private practice in the Miami area, and just a great discussion about her specialty and so much more. We start the conversation by talking about how Dr. Iglesias first became interested in pediatric endocrinology.
Ever since I was in pediatric, I had a very good mentor, and she happened to be the endocrinologist in my hospital when I was doing pediatric. And she was like such a detailed doctor. She would explain everything to you. And on top of that, endocrinology, it's a specialty that covers so many things. That I was really interested in because when it comes, for example, to growth, to thyroid, to obesity, so everything was covered within that specialty, even it was a little linked to genetics. So I really started to be interested in the specialty. I started to manage cases with her. I did a rotation with her. So then, you know, I fall in love with endocrinology.
What's your favorite thing about endocrinology? What do you love the most?
You see, what I love the most is that it's a specialty that you have to think a lot. It's not like a specialty that you know, you have an infection, you prescribe an antibiotic. So you have to really go deeper in things because not everything that looks one thing could be that. It's very linked to other to so many syndromes, so many genetic diseases, metabolic diseases. So it's really a specialty that keeps you studying like every day because you always see like new things. Mm.
What are some of the biggest myths or misconceptions around pediatric endocrinology?
I don't know, from the standpoint of you know, going into a hospital, for example, a lot of people are afraid of diabetic ketoacidosis. I don't know that's what I mostly think because what I usually hear from every student is that they really love that specialty because, you know, the way it it's related to so many, systems, so many, specialties, makes it like really, really like a very complete specialty.
Yeah.
So I haven't heard like so many bad things about my specialty, but mostly like people will be afraid to manage certain things, like, some cases of diabetes acidosis that might look like really scary when you treat them, like when you see them, mm-hmm. Like brain tumor, for example, we see that all the time. So it would be like, the degree of severity of the cases might scare some people, but it's a very beautiful specialty.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the traits that you think make someone to be a good pediatric endocrinologist?
You have to like to study, because as I said, this specialty forces you to study every day. So you have to be committed to the specialty, to study. You have to have like a very open mind, because one person can come for one problem, but or maybe multiple problem that could be, for example, a thyroid disease, but also might come for depression and not be related to thyroid. Mm. So you have to be really open mind when you're treating a patient with a thyroid, with an endocrine condition, because it might have like multiple symptoms. And you might think it might be this condition, but maybe it's not. So you have to really keep thinking, be open mind, ask a lot of questions, be very detailed, be very organized. When it comes to interpret the lab result, it's not always something that is like based on what you see, based on a range. It might be based on the age and sexual development, for example, of a child, that the lab might not even go with his own age, because the child might have, for example, constitutional growth delay, maybe. So he's younger than what he really looks. The bones are younger, the development is younger. So the labs are the same. So they might fit in a younger person, not in what you might see really in a lab. So it's really you need to put attention to the detail, to be very organized, very meticulous at the time you do the physical exam. And those things have helped me a lot in my specialty.
Yeah. For you, what got you interested in pediatrics before pediatric endocrinology? Why not adult internal medicine and then endocrinology?
When I was like back in my country in Cuba, my parents were doctors as well. Mm. So my mom was an ophthalmologist. My dad was an orthopedic. So I used to go and rotate with them, be with them, because there was like no other place where I could go.
The babysitter.
So I used to go to with my mom to the floors. So I most of the time I would go to the pediatric floor, and I would be there with the nurses, like helping and talking to the pediatric patients. And I really always liked, that sweetness, that you see in the pediatric patient. It's like they are really naive when they come to see you. When they are sick, they are really fragile. And the fact that I can help them, it really motivated me a lot with the pediatric population. So for me, like seeing a kid compared to seeing an adult is like a totally different world.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. You're in a community setting. Why work in a community private practice setting versus being in an academic center?
When I moved, I studied in New York, and when I moved to Miami, you see, this is a city where there's not a lot of like hospital, like children hospital. Mm. It has like three, four in the area that I practice. they might have, like, in the whole Florida, like maybe five or six pediatric hospitals in Miami, you know, for a lot of the area. So and they might have like three or four pediatric endocrinologists in every hospital. So it was really like there were not positions at that time when I came in 2010. So I had to jump and open my own practice because, you know, otherwise I would have to work like, you know, doing like emergency medicine or general pediatric in some other clinics. But because I have done the specialty, I wanted to really work in what I did. So I had to, it really like, the system forced me to open a practice because I could not find any available positions at that time.
And you've been doing it now for many years, so it seems like you like it enough to stay there.
Right. You're right. Yes. I've been, I opened my practice in February 2011. And ever since that time, you know, it's been growing and growing. And I have like, right now I have a lot of patients.
Yeah. What types of patients do you see in your practice?
I do see a patient with thyroid problems, either underactive hypothyroidism or overactive hyperthyroidism. And every day I see more and more because a lot of things have been changing on the diet and the environment. So it's been growing. Obesity, the same thing has been like, this problem has been like really escalating. Mm-hmm. I do see a lot of like growth problems. I treat kids with growth hormone, you know, to help them grow. I see diabetic patients. I see patients with, for example, elevated prolactin levels that might be due to a tumor or might be due to other reasons like medications. Or I see patients that have precocious puberty, so they grow really fast and they develop really fast for their age. And I see patients that also develop late for their age. So that's the kind of cases that I see every day.
Yeah. It's interesting. I've heard a couple times from different endocrinologists about the hormone disruptors in our environment and in food. Like as a country, should we be more enraged about what's going on with hormone disruptors in our environment, in our clothing and everything that we're consuming?
Yeah, definitely. Yes. This is a problem that we have been seeing for so many years now, but it's been like, as I said, every year you see like more cases, and you wonder what's going on. And you know, the fact that we are like consuming more like processed food, that a lot of the environment, like contaminants of the environment, a lot of those cleaning products, so many things that are causing disruption the hormones and the hormones, you know, pathway. It's all contributing to a lot of endocrine diseases. So we should really pay attention to that. And I think something should be done, even like more research in regards to that,
yeah.
You know, because I think there's not a lot that has been done. Like sometimes we get more research in other things like vitamin D, and they have like thousands of research about vitamin D. But I wonder what about the other things that are really, causing like a big, big problems in, at least, you know, in our specialty, we see them a lot.
Yeah. Oh, it's scary, all the changes out there. Hopefully we can understand what's going on better for the future for our kids. So everybody doesn't have thyroid issues growing up. I think it's good for business, right? As an endocrinologist, but we hope that people don't suffer from that kind of stuff.
That is true.
So what does a typical day look like for you, or a typical week look like for you in private practice as a pediatric endocrinologist?
Well, the way it used to look before the coronavirus, because now I do a lot of telemedicine, but usually, you know, in the past I would see like maybe 15 patients. I usually see the new patients in the morning, and mostly those were the problems. They get referred by the pediatrician. They get referred by the urgent care or by the emergency room when they diagnose something or they find an abnormal thyroid or a diabetic gets discharged from the hospital. So I get the referral from them, from the pediatricians in the area. And you know, they come to my office and I see them on an initial visit. And then, you know, later on we schedule like, you know, follow-ups after they do the blood work. When they come back, they do like thyroid ultrasound, whatever they need to do. And that's the way it works. I usually see like around 15 patients a day.
Okay. And do you feel like that's sustainable? Is that too much? Is that good?
You know, you want to give like a lot of time to the patient. You want to ask a lot of questions. You want to take time to the examination. But unfortunately, you know, with the system, the way it is with insurance companies forcing every time to do more things like more authorizations, you need to have definitely less time for the patient, and you need to see more and more. Like I see doctors in general practice that they see 40 patients a day, and I don't know how they can do it. But that's the way the insurance companies are forcing the doctors, because then you have to maintain a practice that has like also expensive. You need to pay more practice. You need to pay a lot of like rent and you know, all the societies and licenses. So it's a little crazy. But you know, I wish we could have more time to see the patient and to see them like really with all the time that you really want to give to the patient to examine in detail. So I think medicine will be like different.
Yeah.
But you know, that's what we face today. That's what we have today. Yeah. And we have to deal with insurance companies and everything around them.
Yeah. Pre and post COVID, when you're more in the clinic, in the office, seeing patients in person, how procedure heavy is pediatric endocrinology?
Well, the procedures that I do here in the office mostly are the growth hormone stimulation test that I do for growth, for puberty. So that's mostly my procedures, on top of, you know, initiating insulin pump, educating diabetics, you know, the nutrition part and everything. But in terms of procedures, I think that's what I do, growth hormone stimulation test.
Yeah, interesting. What does the training path look like to become a pediatric endocrinologist?
Well, you have to do 3 years of pediatric and then 3 more years of pediatric endocrinologist.
Okay. How competitive is pediatric endocrinology?
I think it's kind of like not too high, so kind of in the middle, I would say. A lot of people would love to go into pediatric endocrinology, but as I said, there's so little positions that are offered. In fact, we are just a few, like in Florida. It's a very new specialty. It's not something that has been there for so many years. So here in Florida, we are not a lot. So it kind of like, it's not so competitive, but I would say like in the middle, you could get the position for pediatric endocrinology if you really wanna go for it, if you really you know, put all the effort on it. But the problem is that we are not like a lot.
Mm.
It's easy to get there, but they are not like a lot of positions available.
Yeah. So
we were like three or four fellows every, one or two in the first year, then one in the second year and one in the third year in the hospital I did my specialty. Mm-hmm. So we were just a few.
Yeah. So potentially a good field for someone who is more willing to open a private practice like you did.
No, and I have a lot of friends working in the hospital, but in New York, in like other big cities where they have like plenty of hospital for children.
Yeah.
And like in Texas, I have a couple of friends there too that we did training together. And they are in the hospital. Like, not everyone goes into private practice. It's not easy as well, you know?
Yeah.
It's a long way, because when you start, you have to build it up. You don't have any patients. So it will, in my beginnings, I had like one patient like in the week, and then I have the two more the next week, and it was too slow.
Yeah.
But at the end, we made it.
you made it. 10 years in, I would say you made it. What do you miss the most, if anything, from being in an academic environment? And I know you came from training in an academic environment, not necessarily being an attending in academics, but potentially what do you think you would have missed from an academic environment?
I miss the interaction with the other doctors, the fact that you have like access to so many of the good articles, of the good doctors top in certain medical conditions that you it's just you could even like, for example, in New York, you could even like call someone on the phone, like someone that was like top in growth hormone. So you would call that doctor and he would like explain to you whatever you need to know. Here in where I am, I'm a little like isolated, because it's the whole day seeing patients, and sometimes the interaction when you're not like in a hospital or in an academic setting, it's more difficult.
Yeah. So you're more isolated, and for someone who wants to be around other people, maybe just because they're an extrovert or just for the knowledge support as well, especially when you're starting out.
Exactly. For the interaction or discussing cases or, involving like other specialties together in the case. So that's what I miss the most,
Yeah. Very interesting. So for you, do you feel like being in private practice as a pediatric endocrinologist gives you enough time for life outside of seeing patients and charting and billing and all of that stuff?
I think you have to organize your life the way you really want it, because if you are really like organized, if you follow like something in a way that you don't miss like the most important things, I think you will have time for your family. You will go home like relaxed that everything has been done, and you could enjoy your family, I don't work Monday through Friday. I only work Monday through Thursday. So on Friday, if I have a stimulation test, those are the day when I come. Or let's say if I left something like authorizations or that I could not do during the week, then I would, leave it for that Friday. So basically, I'm only working 4 days a week. Mm-hmm. So that way I have time for my children, and I pick them up at school on Friday. So I made my life a little. It all depends on what are your expectations, I love my family, and I love to spend time with my kids, and that's why I did it that way. But other doctors might just fill that Friday with patients like the whole Friday and would work as well.
Yeah.
But that's the way I plan it, because they are still little, you know, they need me more. Once they are bigger, maybe I would like, see more patients on Fridays or do something else related to what I, you know, to my specialty. But yeah, so far that's the way that I establish my life. Well, let's say.
Yeah, very interesting. So, what other specialties do you work the closest with?
We are very close to genetics. There's a lot of overlapping with genetics and endocrine. A lot of syndrome that have like endocrine problems. We also work close with gastroenterologists, because we do see a lot of patients that they do not grow, and they do have, for example, celiac disease or Crohn's disease. So we have to work really close to them. Let's say to neurologists, and in the case of patients that have like prolactinomas or brain tumors. Radiology, we also do bone age. So we have some time to talk to the radiologist. So we do thyroid ultrasound. So we want to know a little detail. So we call them. So it's very, this specialty has a lot of so it's overlapped with other specialties, I would say. So yeah, those are the ones that I think the most.
Yeah. What do you wish other pediatricians out there knew about pediatric endocrinology to help you and help their patients?
I think is they if you teach them so many things that, you know, I have a lot of things that a lot of patients that come to my office, and it's not really a consult that was needed, because it's, for example, an abnormal test that it was like presumably abnormal, but it was because the patient was taking birth control, and that's the way it looked. So I would love to teach pediatrician in a way that they could recognize what is really an endocrine problem, and so they can refer, and what is something that doesn't really need to be referred, that if you do probably if you go more into detail talking to the patient, or maybe do like an extra test, you will realize that it wasn't really, there was not really needed to refer. For example, I do get sometimes a referral for abnormal thyroid function test. And in fact, it was just the method that they use. It was not because it was really abnormal. When I use the proper method, then it comes to a normal test. Mm-hmm. So those are like really things that could maybe identify cases early of, for example, children that are not growing, or cases of puberty that you identify early and don't waste a lot of time. So when they get to us, when they come to us, we really have enough time for them to continue growing. Sometimes I get referral from pediatrician when the children are like 16, 17, the boys for growth, and there's no really chance at that age for you to do something, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. What do you talked earlier about what you love the most about your job. What do you like the least about your job?
You see, in general about medicine nowadays, what I don't really like is that you do, I would say, 50% medicine, but the other 50% is authorization, is calls from insurance companies. Is dealing with papers and send me these papers, so you can approve me this or that. You know, it's a little, or you know, they don't want to give certain medication that is needed, so you need to go through so many steps and unneeded things that you know, that's what I don't really like. Not only my specialty, I think it's a general problem.
Yeah. Interesting. If you had to do it all over again, would you still be a pediatric endocrinologist?
Oh, yeah, yes. I see. And with the experience, even better, because when you're like new, it's very, you're like all scared when you come into practice and you know, but, you know, with time, you get confident in what you do and then you enjoy it more.
Yeah.
And I think you know, that this is what I really love, and I wouldn't be better in another specialty than this one.
Yeah. I think I forgot to ask you, how long is the pediatric endocrinology fellowship?
3 years.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. For the student listening to this who's potentially interested in pediatric endocrinology, what kind of final words of wisdom do you have for them?
I would say, like, you know, if you really like what you're going to do, don't think about the money or what you're going to make, because nowadays that is not something really valid, you know, with the insurance companies having control. I would say just do it because you feel passionate about it. And this is a specialty that will give you a lot back to you, a lot of happiness, because, you know, you help a lot of people. When you see the children, the way they come, like, really small, and then you see like a tall man, like, you know, you are happy. You said, oh my God, I put a little bit of myself into that, you know? So I would say it's a very, for me, I love the way I feel when I see how they do, when I see, you know, the result of my treatment, and it's a very nice specialty. It's you feel happy when you see that something that you did brought like such an amazing result, you know, like see someone that was like, you know, came crying because he was so short, and now it's like a tall man, or you know, a little girl that you know didn't even have friends because she had acne, and then you diagnose her with polycystic ovarian syndrome, and then you give treatment, and then she's now fine, and she, you know, it's really I really love that. I would say they have to do what they love, like go into what you love. Otherwise, it's gonna be hard. For me, the way I see it, it hasn't been hard because I love what I do, and I'm enjoying it with every, you know, every year, every step, every year, every knowledge. I enjoy what I do.
All right, there you have it again, Dr. Lisette Iglesias. You can find her on Instagram at Dr. Liss Endocrinology. That's DRLYS Endocrinology. I hope this was a helpful episode for you. Don't forget to subscribe or follow in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you listen to podcasts. Have a great week. We'll see you next time here on Specialty Stories.
This is MedEd Media.